I'm Jenny Galluzzo, co-founder of The Second Shift. Welcome to our podcast where we talk all things women, work, and well-being, how they intersect, our competing forces, and how to create and maintain personal and professional alignment in your life. Let's do this. I believe that John Patrikoff is the Second Shift's first client. He was so gung-ho about this idea and this business and our mission from day one. And through his career over the past 10 years, as he has moved through different organizations, whether it was at the Tribeca Film Festival, and then he was at NYCFC, starting the soccer league in New York City, and now as the CEO and co-founder of Athletes Unlimited, which operates leagues of women's professional sports, John has really understood the value and the mission of the Second Shift. But obviously, he's very, very on the zeitgeist, because throughout his professional life, each of the things that he has built, the companies that he's worked for, have really become the leading cultural and professional sports indicators of where the culture is going. So whether it was film festivals, and then it was men's soccer in the U.S., and now it's women's sports. He's so ahead of the curve, and I really appreciate him understanding and championing the Second Shift, because it just shows that he has really good taste and really understands that we were also a very much ahead of the curve. So I'm so excited because this is the first time John has appeared on the Second Shift podcast. Athletes Unlimited has been a terrific partner of the Second Shift and hired different women for different functions in their business as they've built it out. Athletes Unlimited has softball, volleyball, lacrosse, and women's basketball. And beyond just the idea of like creating leagues of those women's sports, which is cool in its own right, it is the way he's built out the leagues, the way he's built out his business. It's an athlete-first ideology. It is putting the needs of women up front, whether it's biological, it's family, it's understanding how to provide career development services, and to think through things with a lens that is so inclusive and so empathetic. It's a player's network versus like the league first or the team first. And it's helping to create individual platforms and content around the players. I just think it's so smart. And John is really such a visionary. And obviously, if you think about what's going on in the culture in women's sports, whether it's Caitlin Clark or just the women's sports have had a revenue of over $1 billion recently for the first time ever, that there's huge commercial deals and sponsorship deals for players. This is such a cool thing to watch this build and the infrastructure of it build, the audience for it to build, and to get to be part of it, whether it's working as a client and as a friend and supporter. I am so proud of John, and I'm so happy to be able to work with him and to share this story with you, because what he's doing is so awesome. You've really captured a zeitgeist, it seems, and I really want to give you credit for that, because women in sports and women's sports and the popularity of women's sports, the uplift of women's sports, and the light that's being shown on female athletes is so awesome to see. You were in on this in 2020, so you saw this coming. And what made you think, I'm going to go from men's soccer to women's sports leagues and start this Athletes Unlimited company?
So I guess two things. First of all, I always like want to acknowledge that there have been people working in women's sports for, you know, for decades, right? And not for centuries, but for decades. And so when you really think about like what's happened in this country and what's happening now at this moment, like I always think it's important to acknowledge that it hasn't just happened over 3 years or 4 years or 5 years or even seven. It's been going on, and it takes a lot of work to lay the groundwork. And it really does take each step in that foundation. You know, a lot of people look obviously to Title IX and what happened in the 70s, equal funding, and then successive generations, really then starting with like the WNBA, which started, you know, after the Olympics and was the first pro women's sports league that really gained traction and really had, you know, resources behind it. That said, it was around for 25 years when 2000 came along and hadn't yet had its particular moment. So I always like to start and say this hasn't happened overnight. This didn't just happen with Caitlin Clark. This just hasn't happened over the last 3 or 4 years. It's been going on for a while. But from my perspective, my interest really was sparked in 2018, 2017. I was at New York City Football Club running a pro men's soccer team here in the US. And I started to get struck by the fact that you had seen huge crowds for the women's national team. And names like Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe were like incredibly well-known names. They're big audiences when they played. And yet the pro league in the United States in women's soccer really was not thriving. And I thought there was just a very big disconnect. And while I saw a lot of investment coming into men's soccer, I didn't see the same thing happening in women's soccer. And so it really opened my eyes to what I just saw as a potentially a big untapped opportunity. So that was really 2018. I started to dive more into women's basketball, into the WNBA, and then from there thought about like the broader women's sports landscape. And I just thought I had identified a real gap in between the opportunity and the businesses that were serving it.
But you saw the gap and you saw the opportunity. And I know you're a dad of two young women and you have nieces who are really into women's sports. And so did you see the shift in them as like their interest and sort of that there was like a generational shift? Like you said, it was like 25 years or whatever years, this decades of building upon something. Was it something that you sort of saw happening around you?
Not really at all. I mean, I don't get asked that often, but like, you know, some people say, oh, you know, say what you said, which is, you know, your dad have two, you know, girls, or, you know, you must have seen this, or you must be motivated by like doing something, you know, for your girls and creating a new future. And I'm sure it's some part of like my motivation in the world always has been like to show up and hopefully help do positive things. But that's definitely not what motivated this.
That's even better. It's just a business. And you know what? At the end of the day, like, why is the NFL or the NBA so popular and have so much money behind it? Because it's a business and they've invested the money in that infrastructure and the media to generate that revenue. And so if the same model is put towards women's sports, it's just a business. And I like that you're looking at it as just a business decision. It isn't about like an emotional reaction or, you know, we're doing some sort of favor to these women. This is a good business.
Yeah, absolutely. Now listen, there are two things on this. One is I've kind of had similar experiences in my professional life before this. I left the private equity world to go work at Tribeca Films, a Tribeca Film Festival. And when I did that, everyone was like, what in the world are you doing? You're going to work at a film festival. Like everyone would be incredulous. And I was like, no, I actually see this incredibly powerful cultural institution that has the opportunity to be more than just this 2-week festival. And I was there 11 years and had this great experience. But for many years at Tribeca, I would get that same question. Like, what are you doing? Like, how do you spend the rest of your year? Like, what is this real business? And, you know, I saw a business that ultimately, you know, Madison Square Garden came in and bought half of, and other investors came in and big brands got involved in and was able to do really exciting things around it. And live events became a much bigger industry. And then similarly, when I left Tribeca to go join the men's soccer team, NYCFC, I actually got the same reaction from a lot of people, even in the sports industry. They said, like, soccer's never made it in the United States. Like, people have talked about it for generations. The joke around soccer was always that it's always been the sport of the future, but it never sport today. And while I was there, I had a sense. And so I'd seen the same thing happen both at Tribeca, then at NYCFC. And so when I got to exploring women's sports, I was hearing a lot of the same things I'd heard from people when I, again, had joined Tribeca or when I joined NYCFC. And so it gave me a little bit of the confidence in myself that I think there's a pattern here. Now, that said, you still can't predict the timing. And so when I joined up with Jonathan Soros, when we started to talk in 2018, planned in 2019, and then launched Athletes Unlimited in 2020, there's no way to predict whether the world will catch up in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. And that said, I don't think you hang your hat on a moment. Like, you know, there's definitely a moment right now with Caitlin Clark and what's happening. It's much more of a movement and much more of a sequence of events that again, has happened over the last 4 or 5 years. We've seen massive investments in women's soccer. We're seeing new women's leagues, obviously not just Athletes Unlimited, but in other sports pop up. We're seeing a lot of investors, we're seeing brands, we're seeing media companies get involved. And that's a whole series of things that goes even beyond Caitlin Clark. I mean, she's sparking the fire and taking it to a next level, but it was already on the way.
I read today, I just read the broadsheet, the Fortune newsletter that comes out every day, that Alexis Ohanian is going into women's sports as well and going soccer? No, track.
Yeah, Alexis. Yeah, exactly. So he was—
I mean, that's a real validation of the business model. If somebody's just like, I'm going to go into track. I mean, you very specifically picked sports that weren't soccer or basketball. So I want to talk about that. But like, clearly that's a, you know, wind in your sail as an industry.
Absolutely. So not only Alexis Ohanian, but we've had, you know, in our space, so to speak, I mean, you know, the Golden State Warriors are launching, you know, a new women's basketball team. You've got investors like Sixth Street. You've got investors like Carlyle. Like, there's a lot of institutional capital. There are now a number of dedicated private equity funds dedicated solely to investing in the women's sports space. So it's broad. It's happening at a very rapid pace now. And, you know, I think people are catching up and there's a lot of catching up to do. I mean, the gap is massive. The gap between the fandom and the size of the business, there is a huge audience. Obviously, again, the recent TV ratings show that very clearly. But I think a lot of people have been surprised and have had to wake up and are moving quickly to kind of seize on the opportunity.
It's also a great opportunity for just content, right? That, like, we think about athletes as their own brand, as a platform, as a story that's being told. And I know that's a really big part of what Athletes Unlimited does. And I want to talk about how you think about your league differently, because it's so specific and focused on what I think of as like the holistic betterment of the athletes. It's athlete first instead of league first. So how did you come up with that? Like, walk through that and how you came up with it, because it really changes the model of like the traditional male-centered focused league and institutions.
Yeah, thanks, Jenny. You got it exactly right. And it's awesome to hear you say that, because that's kind of what we're trying to, that is our kind of fundamental principle. And I think it's a mash with, again, where the world is heading. So back in 2018, 2019, I started looking at opportunities to buy a team in the National Women's Soccer League or the WNBA, become a team owner alongside other people and be very focused on that model. I met Jonathan Soros along the way, and Jonathan was very interested in the idea of investing in women's sports. But it was really Jonathan who said to me, if I'm going to go do this, and if we're going to go do this together, I really think we should start from scratch. And I don't want to go invest in an existing league. I really think we should think about how we can design sports leagues that are good for the athletes and also meet fans where they are. And I thought that was a huge, ambitious, slightly crazy kind of like proposition, starting from scratch, trying to rethink a model in its entirety. But we spent a few months in 2019 really working through what that meant. And it really came down to two things. One is fandom was changing. More and more fans are following athletes more than they're following teams. And while many of us and even many young kids still love their favorite hometown team, the reality is a lot of young fans are following their favorite athlete even more. And if that favorite athlete moves from one team to another, fandom will move with them. And so we noticed that. And so that was one big piece. And the second was in women's sports, but also in men's sports, like, as you said, none of these leagues are centered really around the athletes or athlete well-being and aligning with the athletes as stakeholders. And so in 2020, we launched Athletes Unlimited, and we announced we were going to have a launch in softball, which, as you said, is kind of maybe a sport that people have spent less time thinking about than basketball or soccer. But exactly that. We brought in the athletes as business partners, board of directors, profit participants, involved in day-to-day governance. But we also created this very unique model where you as a fan can really follow your favorite athlete. And we do a ton of storytelling and a ton of off-field content as well as on-field content so that you really can get that full like experience of following your favorite athlete and connecting you with your favorite athlete.
I think it's so smart because it blends content and content creation with the business of sport, which is so smart because you're right. Like, who do we know? We know these players who are putting out their own brand story or become their own content creator, influencer. And especially for a sport that maybe isn't as well known, if you can create that dialogue and you can create that fandom or just the influence around a person, it brings them money, it brings them attention, and it then will like influence and build out the entire league. But I just want to go back to one thing. You didn't just think about the players as profit sharing partners. You also created a season that's really different that I think really speaks to it being athletes first, because most seasons are very long and you have to travel. And for women, you know, my audience, my community, we're women. And so the needs and the life of a woman and her family is very different if you're have to be on the road. So changing that model really does support the idea that you can be professional, you can be a working athlete, and you can continue doing that while having a family or supporting your family, having children.
One of the real benefits of starting with like a blank sheet of paper, as we did, was that we were able to kind of design sports leagues that, again, as I said, could work for the athletes and also were just based in the way we as two, you know, entrepreneurs and leaders wanted to build a company. Whereas if you come into an existing league and you buy a team, there's a tremendous amount of like legacy infrastructure, legacy behaviors, legacy rules that Jonathan rightly didn't want to get involved in. And, you know, not to bring up some of the negativity, but if you look back to what happened in certainly in 2020 and 21 in the Women's Soccer League here in the US, there was a lot of like exposing of really bad conditions, really poor treatment of athletes, and something that's been going on in women's sports in particular for a very long time. So we had the benefit of starting with this blank sheet and said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it the right way. And so, as you said, our leagues are structured very differently. If you take softball as an example, we have a month-long season. It all happens in Chicago. Four teams worth of athletes all come to Chicago and they compete over that 1 month in one location. We provide housing, we provide childcare, we provide, you know, most of the meals, we provide all of the necessary like resources for their kind of well-being. And, which is really exciting, we also do a lot of professional development and kind of broad community development outside of just what happens on the field. And so it's allowed us to kind of show up the way we think any sports league should show up and any company should show up. And again, I think it is good and it's the right thing to do, but it's also good business, because I said to everyone, and I continue to say, I said in the first 2 years, really in a profound way, which is our number one KPI was the athlete experience and the athlete satisfaction. We needed athletes to come back and want to play with us. And quite frankly, they're not making the millions and millions of dollars that men's sports athletes are. And in many cases, they're deciding, well, should I keep playing the sport or should I retire and go into another career? So we need to make sure that that experience for them is really top notch and that they benefit from it.
And how has the response been?
So the response has been great. I mean, we started with softball in 2020. From the beginning, we'd identified softball as a massive sport in college and massive sport on ESPN for those of your listeners. It's always fun that, you know, I meet people who played the sport of softball, but then really dropped off kind of later in life. But the reality is in a lot of parts of America, like softball is a huge, huge sport. It's a huge sport in California. It's a huge sport in the Southwest, the Midwest, a little bit less so in the Northeast. But when you look, the TV audiences for college softball are massive. And then the second sport, which we knew we were going to launch in right away, and we did in February of 21, was volleyball, which is probably a little more familiar to all of your listeners and people have taken notice of it, but volleyball is a massive sport.
Huge. Every kid I know plays volleyball.
And it's massive around the world. It's massive around the world. There are a billion people that play volleyball around the world. They're professional leagues. But what we saw in 2020 and then launched in 21 was there was no pro league in the United States. It was wild. Like there were 400 Americans every year who would go play all over the world. They'd go play in China, they'd go play in Russia, they'd go play in France, Germany, like Italy, you know, South America. So it was kind of obvious, like volleyball is this huge sport. It needs a pro league in the US. And we launched that in 21. And then we launched lacrosse. And then in 2022, we launched basketball. And so we are now running four pro sports leagues. We've run 15 seasons across those four leagues. Games run ESPN, Nike's a partner, Gatorade's a partner, EY is a partner, go down the list. And it's been, yeah, we've gotten a lot of traction. So it's great. Still a long, long way to go. I mean, like this is just the beginning of a very, very long journey.
But for the athletes, I would imagine that they're incredibly grateful to have this opportunity to continue doing something that they love professionally, close to home, not having to go to play in China and leave, you know, their families, and having somebody looking out for their best interests and also trying to help them as they navigate career transitions, thinking about a future. And like you said, you've built that in to the ethos of the brand. So how has the reaction from the athletes been?
Yeah, I mean, the athletes are incredibly grateful. I actually don't love that sentiment. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but that's actually not like really what I'm looking for. I mean, in some respects, you know, it's great and it's very reaffirming.
But you give them, there's a platform that they wouldn't necessarily have. So somebody saw an opportunity. Again, it goes back to it's a business and business is business and business is good. But it's also really nice to do something that has meaning and purpose and helps people. And if you don't see it, you can't be it. So if there aren't leagues for girls, then it doesn't show younger girls that they can be that thing.
Absolutely. And then I think like one of the things that I've come to think a lot about and also like gives me another kind of sense of business purpose is that I do fundamentally believe that like sport is very good for people to participate. Whether you go on to become a pro athlete, which is going to only happen for very few, there's a lot of research, a lot of evidence that just playing sport, in particular playing team sports, is really good for your personal development, skill building. And generally speaking, like I think that our vision of all the positives that can come out of it go way beyond just kind of reaching the athletes that play in our AU leagues and more to showcasing kind of like the positivity, joy that can come with being on a team and playing team sports.
Okay. So I also want to talk about the company you've built because we've worked together. You've been incredibly supportive of the Second Shift over the years. And I really am super grateful for that because it goes along also with the idea of what you're building as a company, which is also incredibly female-driven as an operation. Some of the benefits and the ways that you're building out your business are really progressive. How do you think about that as well when you're starting from scratch there?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, today, Athletes Unlimited, I mean, I'm a cisgender white man and my partner in Jonathan Soros is a cisgender white man and we run a women's sports organization. So let's not like, you know, let's not overlook that fact. 70% of our staff are women. 70% of our leadership are women. The first hire I made at Athletes Unlimited was a woman, Anna Drucker, who's started as our VP of finance and has become our COO. And so I'm very grateful to the Second Shift for making that connection and making that happen. And Anna's an awesome member of our team, but alongside so many other great women. And so that's obviously a huge reality of who we are. And hopefully we have diversity, not only in terms of, you know, gender, but also from a racial and ethnic perspective as well. And that's, I think, incredibly important. Again, I think it's just a fundamental part of being good business and being good for business and also what everybody should be thinking about and trying and aspiring to. But more importantly, we have done a lot and it's really fun, right? Like to start again, a business from scratch, you have the ability to do a lot of things that you wouldn't do if you were saddled by a lot of legacy infrastructure and a lot of legacy practices. So I think that, you know, really proud of the culture we've built internally at the organization. We started Athletes Unlimited. We announced it on March 3rd of 2020. So for everybody, they can remember back to what happened just a few days later. So we've ended up building an entirely virtual organization. I'm here in New York in our office. There are a couple of us that come in every day to this office, but very few of us. The rest are in 20 states around the country. So we're a virtual organization. We've put in place a lot of policies that we hope are good again for the employees and also for us as a business. So we have a flexible PTO plan, unlimited PTO, where staff with approval can, you know, take as much PTO as they think is needed. People travel a ton for our industry. Sports is a really, really grueling industry to work in. Days are really long. You're putting on live events. But when we're not and people don't have to be there, we give them a lot of flexibility in where they are and how they spend their time as long as they're getting what they need to get done. And then certainly tried to be at the leading edge. We've worked with Reshma Sajani and Moms First on, you know, our pregnancy policies and leave and family leave, both that applies to both spouses, regardless of whether you're childbearing or not. And then, of course, we've tried to extend that to the athletes as well. And I think probably one of the places where we were able to make the biggest impact was on our childcare policies around the athletes. And again, really providing for those that are moms to be able to bring their children with them, to really make them feel safe. I mean, and that is a truly profound change in what's happened in women's sports, because it was basically assumed that if you had a child, your career was over. And really trying to make sure that's not the case, to normalize and enable women who have had children to continue playing. I think that's a massive change that's just happened in the last few years. And I think we're a big part of, you know, that overall effort, and really proud of that.
I'm so proud of you. I think it's very cool. And being in women's sports and just in the like politicized world we live in, whether it's like playing in red states where there's no abortion, you know, where people are so vocal in the things that they feel that they are standing up for or against. How much of, or, you know, people were so up in arms about Caitlin Clark and her pay. And then yesterday she made $28 million on a Nike deal. So it's like, but they're so vocal and unafraid to have very specific stands that are very political. How do you navigate that? Whether it's, you know, like I said, red state and reproductive rights in specific areas, or trans athletes playing, you know, trans men playing in women's leagues. How do you like see through and keep on going when there's so much going around in this world?
So all of what you've just mentioned are things that I rightfully have to spend like a portion of my time thinking about in very meaningful ways. And I'll give you the best example. You know, one of the examples is that we played our volleyball league in year one in Dallas, in Texas. And then after some of the new regulations in Texas, we actually ended up playing our volleyball league and our basketball league in Dallas as well. So both of those times we went through the process of thinking about, you know, the decision to play in Texas and to think about, in particular, you know, reproductive rights and what that would mean for athletes. You also mentioned the gun laws in Texas. And so what we did is we went through a very deliberate process of doing great research, talking to people on the ground, thinking about what it would mean to have our league there. And then more importantly, because of the way we're structured, we have in each of our sports a player executive committee that's made up of five players that represent the whole player body. And we worked with them to talk through the decision of whether we should continue or go and play in Texas or not. And the presence of that kind of collaboration amongst our staff, but also the athletes right from the start, like that's just the way we operate, enables us to make decisions, I think, in a way that ends up in the right place. Ultimately, we ended up going back and playing in Texas. So we are a women's sports league that ultimately chose to play in Texas. And, you know, there are some people out there say, you know, that's crazy, or you shouldn't be doing that, or how could you do it? The way I like to think about these issues, though, and I think our team thought about them, was first, you do think about the real issues that affect your employees and your athletes, right? Like there's some practical considerations, like how do you deal with gun safety in your venue? And like, what is that going to mean? And are people going to be safe? And so that's like one issue. And then certainly as it became a question of reproductive rights, like what does it mean if you're, you know, going and conducting business in a state where people won't have access to those kind of health services. So that's like where the conversations really start. Like, all right, what are we going to do? How are we going to ensure that people have access to healthcare? How are we going to protect them legally? And then you move to much broader issues of like the impact on the world and society. And I think in that regard, like, I think we do show up and try to have a stand and try to do the right thing. But that's just, I think, a part of almost any company in this day and age. And we're proud of where we stand on a lot of these issues. But again, I think we always hope that's a representation of kind of the athletes as a whole and our staff as a whole.
I love that the players get a say, that it's a collaborative and transparent organization. That's, I mean, that what more can an employee want? I mean, they're not employees, obviously, but just having the ear of the owners and the people who are coordinating and not feeling like they're just, you know, cogs is a really different way of thinking about professional sports.
It's a massive change. It is probably the biggest, you know, difference between us and, you know, almost any other organization that's out there in pro sports. And we hope are thinking that it's a model for other businesses, which is Jonathan and I and our senior leadership team meet with the player executive committee in each of our sports leagues every week. So I'll have a meeting with the five members of the player executive committee for lacrosse, five members of basketball, softball, and volleyball. And we do separate meetings, and each one that's led by our director of sport, who's effectively like our commissioner, and we go through every issue. So they actually lead on player recruitment. They decide who to invite to play in the league, as one example. When we go through a venue decision or a location decision, as I said, they'll be heavily involved in that. They're heavily involved in the uniforms and like deciding on what we wear. We go through strategic partnerships, everything. There's two sides to that. One is somebody could say that's it slows things down. Like, that's a lot of time every week, right?
Committees.
1 hour, and it's committee, yeah. And everything else. We have found that it like has it's helped us avoid so many mistakes and so many issues that we would have made over and over again. Like, I don't think we would be able to have done anything like what we've done if we didn't have that structure in place, because it's really, really helped us avoid some really big mistakes that we otherwise would have made.
Oh my God. So when are you going to get into fencing? So I can go back at it. As you know, I was a collegiate fencer. So I feel like that when there's a fencing league, although it's not a team sport, I'll come out of retirement.
Come out of retirement.
Yeah, well, I'll come out of retirement.
So Jenny, this, although I've known you a long time and I know about your fencing career, this is the first time anyone, you know, has talked about Athletes Unlimited fencing. I've talked about like every sport you could possibly imagine, but fencing,
it's really popular now. All these kids are doing it. It was not that popular when I was doing, but now it's really popular. You never know.
Well, you know, listen, in the broader sense of kind of like what's happening in sport, like, it is true that like it is a very different environment than it was just 5 years ago. I mean, the change in the way, you know, young people in particular are consuming sports, the rise obviously of social media, but also like new digital platforms and Netflix and Amazon and so many other streaming services. It does mean that sports that actually do have these followings, there's actually like a good reason to look at the numbers and be like, listen, I'm not sure if there are enough fencing fans in the United States. I don't know the numbers, but like it's possible that there's like a global audience that actually could like sustain a business. And so it's hard, like niche sports are not easy. Like for us, that's not our first place to look. And therefore like sports, like again, softball, volleyball, basketball are ones that like really do have big, massive audiences in the United States. And that's important to us, but it is a very fun time and exciting time because things that maybe could never have made sense a few years ago can really potentially make sense now.
Well, I'll keep a lookout you'll let me know if you get into fencing. I'll be your sideline commentator. I can tell you what's happening and be like, no, that's a parry. No, it's a repost. it'd be fascinating to watch. I'm just kidding. It's not. But I thank you for your time, John. I thank you for being such a champion of women, of the second shift and our community. And I just think what you're doing is super cool. And, you know, I know that my kids are consuming sports constantly, like on all platforms, whatever, if it's like, you know, silly, pranky things or just the amount of content that they consume on sports and the amount of sports like influencers that they're into. And if they could, we need to move them into the women's sports world. I have two boys so that they can see that like women athletes are just insanely talented, that there's such an interesting world out there that is outside of the traditional sports world. And I see that coming. So I commend you so much for all of the work that you're putting into making this change for athletes and for women and for the sports world.
Well, the feeling's mutual. Thank you to Second Shift and everything that you've done for AU, but also what you're doing. And everyone should stay tuned. You know, follow us on AU Pro Sports on our social handles. I think people will love to see the content we put out and listen, learn about the athletes. They're incredible, like you said, incredible women and incredible stories. And it's awesome. And this summer, get ready to watch some softball and some lacrosse, and games will be on ESPN, but you can follow them, you know, in other places as well. And again, it's just the beginning, like for anybody that's just starting to kind of pay attention to what's happening in women's sports. And by the way, that's for whether it's men or women. I mean, a huge portion of the audience for women's sports is men, but I think there's a real opportunity to do things differently. And it's an exciting time to kind of be part of that movement of kind of rethinking what fandom looks like and how you can be a fan and new models that, you know, haven't been explored yet. So that's the time we're living in, and it's exciting.
All right. I'll be doing that. It's perfect. It's like the Olympics are this summer.
Got it.
And it's just going to like draft off the like popularity of the Olympics. It's going to be huge for women's sports.
Right. That's exactly it.
Mwah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining the conversation. For more, you can follow along at thesecondshift.com. Please rate, review, subscribe, and help us make work work for you and for all women.